Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions this evening are Carl Gevers from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. If you'd like to send us questions, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Carl, Graham, good to see you both here this evening. Graham, if I may start with you, a decent day on the market today. Mainly, it seemed, the resources stocks, but there were some pretty good performances by some of the shares that came out, or companies rather, that came out with results. Thinking of Tsoho, for example. But do you think the mood is calming down a little? It's been pretty rough the last couple of weeks.
Well, Julieta, I'd say that our market, I think, has been a lot calmer. If I think about the broader market, I mean, obviously, you know, Naspers and Richemont are all over the ballpark and sort of push the indices, you know, quite violently. But underneath that, Julieta, I would say a lot of the smaller caps, mid caps that we follow, even if you look at the banks, you know, obviously take APSA, got pushed to $200, came back to 160, but it's been pretty steady through what has been, you know, a lot of chaos in global markets. So in answer to your question, I think the broader SA market is a lot less volatile than the local indices because of the big caps. And that's a hell of a lot less volatile than what's happening in the rest of the world. And I think the reason for that is, you know, if you think about APSA, it's not exactly expensive. So you've seen a massive re-rating of you know, some, particularly the US banks. That hasn't hurt APSA, really. In fact, we had a 50 bip rate increase in SA that augurs well for, you know, South African banks. So, yeah, I think all things considered, the broader market's actually a lot less volatile than we think.
Carl, I mean, is it to some extent also, I think Bright Kamalo was saying on the week that was a couple of weeks ago, you know, South Africans didn't get all these stimulus paychecks during lockdown, that they went on sort of a wild market gaming spree, which is what you saw in the case of the United States. To some extent, we're used to higher inflation and a more hawkish reserve bank. So we didn't have any of the highs of COVID that other global markets have experienced, and hopefully we won't suffer their same crushing lows. Would that be a sort of a fair assessment of where we're at?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we don't have a tech sector that attracted a lot of growth money, and that's where a lot of you know, we've seen how it pulled back. So I think our economy, as Graham said, certain, you know, like a process and us, but certainly had a bit of that element, and they certainly have a big impact on our overall market if one looks at the numbers. But, you know, our industrials, our banks, they weren't priced for much growth, you know, and I think that's where globally where we see pressures on growth and growth being revised downwards. Like for assets, you know, we're already low. So I think the impact is significantly lower than for the higher growth global markets, or at least where the growth was priced in significantly.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about one of those companies. And Graham mentioned it at the start, Richemont, but I'll stick with you, Carl. And the question that's come through is, what's the panel's view on Richemont, given its good set of results, but negative comments from the CEO? And then Aspen's manufacturing plant will be saved. We'll talk about that, in which case the share price is cheap. But let's start with Richemont, because they're clearly... there was a lot priced in. And in fact, I think I don't know if it was the CFO's comments on the presentation on Friday. And he said, we didn't put this message out. You guys seemed to kind of inflate the share price. Your expectations were not our expectations. We didn't give you these expectations. So he was quite, I believe, quite disgruntled at the reaction to the results, which were phenomenal. If you look at Richemont now, would you say this is a ridiculous buying opportunity, or do you think one should still be a little bit circumspect?
Yeah, I think, you know, one has to be cautious. I mean, if one looks at the luxury sector overall, where obviously Richemont plays in, you know, it's very much correlated to stock markets, because that's where wealth is generated. So when stock markets rally, generally the wealthy feel wealthier, and then they spend a lot more on luxury goods. So I think there is certainly a correlation there, and given where we are now in terms of where the markets are, I'd probably be a bit cautious on Richemont. Long term, I think it's probably a solid long term holding in a portfolio, especially for South Africans to get some offshore exposure there. And it's been pretty conservatively managed generally by management. And I mean, Johan Rupert's not called Rupert the Bear for no reason. So I think for long term, probably, you know, one could nibble on it. But I think there could still be some pressure on it going forward. Obviously, China being in lockdown was a big negative for it, given that a lot of their stores are closed and so on. And that, you know, that could be a short-term opportunity in terms of sentiment, because those things will open again, and sales will continue. But yeah, I'd be cautious at this point in time.
Graham, would you take a different view? I mean, just particularly on Johan Rupert's comments, he also said, don't expect this massive bounce back in China. But, you know, by the same token, if the news is bad, it's not all going to hell. You know, he said people tend to overreact on either side. Where are you in terms of Richemont?
So I must say, you know, I often say living on the southern tip of Africa and accounting for one fraction of a percent, you know, as a country of Richemont's sales, it's difficult in a way to get your head around it. I think the one thing I will say is, you know, a lot of people sort of treat this thing as sort of bulletproof and say, well, you know, the wealthy are, you know, they soar above the clouds and, you know, what happens on the ground doesn't really affect them. But if you look at Richemont's results over a long period of time, they're actually quite erratic and quite cyclical. So on one level, I would agree with Carl, but I think your point is I suppose, the gist of our view. And I must say, we don't actually hold very many Richemonts at all, because it's always, you know, the valuation has always just been, you know, really rich from an SA investor's point of view for what you're getting. But I have a slightly different view. And I think, obviously, Russia's cut some sales out of the market. I think China is an important market for them, but you've seen other parts of the world also kicking into gear. I have this strange thought in the back of my mind that, you know, luxury goods, I'm talking about Van Cleef & Arpels and Cartier jewelry and watches, could very well be the other inflation hedge, if you could put it that way. So I think my sense is that, you know, when you read those results, you sort of said, man, this is fantastic, even if you compared them with, you know, the pre-COVID kind of numbers. So personally, I think that the FD's view is right. You know, we as market players, we get ahead of ourselves. We sort of put a lot of store in the fact that activist investors are suddenly there and they're going to do magical things. And then we get disappointed when very highly valued shares disappoint. But the reality of it is, I think we mustn't forget this is a massively cash generative business, in spite of, you know, maybe China slowing down and loss of Russian sales and maybe some wealth effect. But the flip side to that is, if you look at it in euro term, in Swiss franc terms, sorry, I think that, you know, about 10% of the share price is currently in cash.
Yeah.
And that just accumulates every day. So my sense is I differ slightly with Carl. I think on the short term, it's looking quite interesting for a bounce, just because, you know, a lot of negative comment has been baked in. And I think if we fast track 3 or 6 months, you may not find that the results necessarily reflect that. But I'm not sure I want to hold this thing through all cycles, you know, on a 5-year view. So I feel it's oversold right now. It's a fundamentally good business. It's well placed. But I that's why we don't hold them, lots of them, in client portfolios, because we think that it's actually quite an erratic player.
Yeah, and you would think otherwise, actually. What about Aspen? Carl, the question was on the manufacturing plant. And I think maybe the question is a little bit misguided, I must say. Will the manufacturing plant be saved, in which case the share price is cheaper? And I think they're talking about the vaccines that they were hoping to produce from the Trebecha plant for Africa's vaccine rollout for COVID. But it's not the whole plant that is geared, you know, they repurposed some lines, essentially. And yes, it is a fairly complex process, Stavros Nikolaou was saying, but this is a facility that will be used for other things if they don't get the vaccine production through. So that notwithstanding, would you say that Aspen's share has maybe come off too much, or maybe it also got ahead of itself with all the kind of vaccine production excitement?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly it got ahead of itself with the excitement around the vaccine story. But as you say, they had the facility, so they built, they had excess capacity, and for them it was quite suitable to plug that capacity with the vaccine production, you know, from a return on invested capital point of view, because the capital had been sunk, you know, besides, you know, just building the lines within the facility, and then producing, and then on the other side, obviously helping the you know, vaccine story. But I think it's certainly a negative that they couldn't sell anything after having done all of that. Mm. But long term, you know, they built that excess capacity to fill it with products that they'll bring to market, or the brands that were generics essentially that come off patent that they can then plug into their facility, or something that they buy, which has been their strategy, buying products and then manufacturing them locally. So I think you know, the share I think had run ahead of itself with the excitement on the vaccines, which to be honest wasn't a huge component of their profits, not hugely profitable. But yeah, I think at the moment you'd probably find that it's at best probably fairly valued, I'd say. So it's come back again, but I think the growth prospects for Aspen are probably muted at this point in time.
Graham, what do you think? And a couple of years ago, when Aspen was going through its real slump, you really liked Aspen because you said, actually, the bad news is in it, they've done the hard work, the legwork, you know, to build this kind of global manufacturing facility for steriles production. It was a very complicated process. They've got facilities in France, they've got them in South Africa, and they were kind of, now was the time to buy them. So that was a few years ago that we spoke. I don't know what you think of them at 157 Rand or thereabouts.
Well, maybe just to answer the question about the vaccines, you know, many vaccine producers around the world didn't make, you know, oodles of money. You know, one or two, obviously, those who obviously developed the original vaccines, they might have benefited. But the reality is this was always, you know, almost a case of let's get the world back to work. And I think the reality of it is the fault, if you want to put fault anywhere, is I think in the African nations who just haven't, you know, aggressively rolled out the vaccinations. Now, you might say, well, you know, we've got herd immunity and we've got young populations and all those lovely things. But, you know, the reality of it is, I think, as the president was imploring the guys to, you know, let's get vaccinated, because that's also what helps, you know, the whole world move on. So, but in answer to your question, I still think that Aspen is a significantly better business today than it was, you know, 5 years ago. They've done a lot of heavy lifting. You know, whenever they make mention about maybe buying things again, you see the share price take a bit of a hit, because we've all got that T-shirt. We don't like that talk. But I think it's a well-placed business. It's well-run. I think the issue around the vaccines, as Carl said so eloquently, it was, you know, it might have made them a little bit of money, but what they've done is they've built a world-class facility, and they're now penetrating some interesting markets.
Here's a question, I suppose, which is maybe a question quite pertinent to a lot of viewers, and it is, please ask the panel which global or local and local ETF can one invest in for growth and dividend income for the long term, or is now the time to invest with actively managed unit trusts? In other words, is this the time when you want someone, you know, putting their head on the block and saying these are the shares that are going to outperform and not tracking the index? Carl, to start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think firstly, dividend and growth in one ETF would be difficult, because you either get growth where growth gets reinvested by the company, or you get a companies that pay out a lot more of their earnings, where, you know, that's where you get more dividends. So you probably would have to choose either or if you want this, you know, a specific component. Or I mean, in terms of the market environment, we active managers, so by default we'd say get a stock picker, but I think it is probably a better stock picker's market than buying an index, because there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of impacting elements, macro elements, on certain sectors and certain specific stocks. So I think it probably is a better environment for stock pickers to active managers to generate alpha.
I mean, Graham, I suppose then, you know, the complexity is that you could get unit trust, actively managed funds with either a growth or a dividend mandate. But to the question, I mean, is there still a place for ETFs given what we've seen happen to the market in the last few weeks?
Well, I think you have to separate the SA story for ETFs and the global story for ETFs. Because if you go and have a look, you know, globally, you can buy, you know, momentum ETFs, you can buy all sorts of interesting things. Whereas in South Africa, we seem to have this obsession with the top 40 and variations on that. And I think until our ETF and benchmarking and thinking evolves, we are playing with very blunt instruments, if I could put that way. So I think, you know, Julieta, I take the example of the top 40. SAB Miller was taken out 5 or so years ago by AB InBev at a record level. Then, of course, we had the Naspers process reorganization, which saw Naspers come massively down from over 20% of the index to 6% or thereabouts. And more recently, you saw BHP, you know, with the consolidation of the two structures. Now, all three of those events actually locked in very high levels for the top 40, but the broader market didn't perform nearly as well. So I'd say that over the last 5 years, you would have done fantastically well having been in the top 40 relative to most active managers. Mm. We can debate, was it sensible to have 20% in Naspers and things like that? But I think personally, the next 3 to 5 years is going to be a stock pickers market. You've seen it. I mean, the S&P 500 is now dominated, in inverted commas, by highly valued or previously highly valued tech counters, and that whole story is unraveling. So, you know, like Carl, we believe our own nonsense, and I would argue the case for active, but I think there's a lot more merit. And it comes back to the point we made when we first started chatting this evening. And that is, I think a lot of the broader market is actually performing a whole lot better than the mainstream indices. So yes, I would say You can achieve reasonable growth with yield, but you really want to tilt one way or the other.
Okay. Just very quickly, there's a follow-on question from the same viewer asking whether it's time to invest in tech stocks like the NASDAQ 100 index. Carl, do you think we're only partially through the sell-off in tech shares, or do you think most of the pain has been experienced?
Yeah, I think there's still some pain to come, I think. So I'd wait, but I mean, there's certain tech stocks that are looking attractive. I mean, Apple being one where I think, you're getting solid valuation, solid cash flows. But some of the other growth stocks in terms of the tech space, I think stock selection is important within that space. Some were just too expensive.
Mm. Graham, does that go back to your points? You know, would you, you know, also if tech stocks, would you rather just pick a few names rather than, you know, the top 100?
Yeah, well, I think the important thing is Amazon is a consumer stock. Apple is also, in my mind, a consumer stock. It's not a tech in the pure sense. So I think, you know, things like Microsoft's, it's a good business model, but on a 30-odd multiple still, I'd say it's a bit full. So I think you want to pick your stocks, and I'd probably lean towards slightly more defensive, it sounds daft, but slightly more defensive, almost utilitarian, you know, companies maybe like Micron, you know, or ASML, the companies like that who, you know, benefit from the wave but have other things going for them.
And then there's a question, it's on a Fortress. Fortress announced today that it's looking to collapse its dual structure into one stock. So they had A and B shares, which have become very unpopular. Will this be positive for the B shares? Carl, have you looked at this? Because I can't remember if the B shares where you basically get whatever's left after the A shares have had their dividends.
Yeah. If there's anything left. it's essentially the A shares are basically more fixed income, you know, inflationary increase on the distribution, and then the B shares get what's left. And I think the problem is when the cash flow or the dividend runs out and the Bs don't get anything. That's why it's no surprise that the Bs are trading at a significantly lower price. So I think 3.90 compared to the A's at 11 11.90. So the A is still getting a dividend of about 6% at the moment. So the consolidation, the tricky part is like how much, you know, how do you consolidate? Because if I'm not mistaken, the NAV, they have equal rights to the net asset value of the company. So I think that's where, you know, I don't know at what price you would then, I guess the market would decide. But the Bs have done quite a bit better given these talks of a consolidation. So I think the Bs might be a bit better off for the short term.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll bring up the B shares graph in a second. Graham, if I am not mistaken, I think Fortress needed 75% approval from, I think it's both A and B shareholders to collapse the structure, you know, which is quite a hard ask, especially if you're an A shareholder and you like your dividends. But the performance of the B shares today, up 4%, does suggest that there is expectation that this is going to happen.
Yeah, but also, you know, as Cole was saying, these things have been hit hard. So the reality of it is that, well, I think the other point to make is, you know, some people would be mean and say, well, it's like shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic because, you know, so much value has been destroyed over the period in both of them, but obviously more so in the B. So I think Fortress also put the rationale out that they want to comply with the JSE listing requirements for REITs. So I think that might sweeten the deal. But as I understand it, they have appointed an independent committee of the board, and they obviously then need to do the fair and reasonable, and I would assume canvass the shareholders. I think if they're fortunate, or you know, if luck goes their way, maybe there's quite a big overlap between A's and B's, and you might find people held both of them, you know, ab initio, or simply, you know, said, well, if I hold both of them, you know, my overall profile is sort of slightly more balanced. But I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just been such a painful destruction of value. And of course, the big question is, and I think they've done some good work, let's not be completely mean, but they've done good work at restructuring the balance sheet, and I think a little bit more confident going forward. But, you know, the listed property space is still going to be, I believe, a very difficult one for some time. Still lots of stock around. Obviously, some guys less affected than that than others, but it's going to be, it's not exactly like an open goal.
No. Okay, one share that, you know, everyone should have bought last year and not everyone did was Thungela. And the question is, what's the panel's view? Is it a good time to sell? I know John Bickard would say, if a share has gone up 10 times, then you should probably sell it. Carl, you know, Thungela's been an absolute stonker. I think, you know, there were revisions upwards to, I don't know if it was JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley, I think had a 290 Rand target maybe on the price. I don't know where it is at the moment, but if you bought any time last year, you've made money.
Yeah, I would certainly take profits. I think, I mean, just like you say, a 10 bagger, you'd take at least some profit. Might not, you know, maybe don't sell everything, but I mean, it still looks cheap on the current earnings. But again, you know, how long, you know, the coal price, you have to have a view on that. And I think there'll probably be a bit of pressure further out. But certainly, you know, it looks attractive from a short term, you know, if you just look at the PE, but I think one has to look further out, and bottom line, I'd take some profits.
Yeah. Graham, would you also take a little money off the table?
I mean, let's cast our mind back on why Thungela, you know, ended up in people's portfolios, and that was that Anglos didn't want this dirty energy play. So they kind of made our problem with, you know, very small distributions. Or holdings. But I think, you know, the environmental story probably augurs quite well for Thungela on the short term, because there's been nobody in the world seems willing to back coal projects, not the bankers nor the capital markets. So that probably augurs well for people who've actually got reserves. But yeah, I think the point that Cole makes is well made. You know, we don't know where these commodity prices are going to settle. I think most of the world, maybe the exception of South Africa and India and a couple of others, are trying very hard to wean themselves off coal. So let's say longer term, 5 years, you don't want to be there. You've made a great return. I'd probably chuck them out now.
Okay. Getting to your stock picks this evening. Carl, what takes your fancy?
So, probably a bit boring. I'm going with ShopRite. The main reason there is, you know, it's a well-run company, but mainly on the macro environment. You know, we're going into, or we already are in a high inflation environment. Interest rates are going up. So ShopRite being a defensive retailer, it should benefit from inflation, you know, on the top line. And volume should be pretty defensive, you know, given that it's mainly food and it's not a luxury or discretionary, staples, that's it, yeah. And then also they benefit from the grants, and I think there's pretty slim chance that grants will dry up because it's a big political tool. So I think it'll be a good defensive position to hold over the next period.
Yeah, and certainly a better price than 240 Rand, where it was not too very long ago. Graham, you've already told us what your stock pick is. It's Aspen. I didn't realize until I'd asked the question. So at 157 Rand, do you think it's worth it?
Yeah, I think what Cole was saying about, you know, it's not going to give you spectacular growth and you need to be aware of that, I think is right. But I think equally, a lot of elective procedures and so on have not really worked. I think they've got a good portfolio, as we were discussing earlier. I think the one thing we didn't really touch on was the valuation. I don't think it's a sort of stellar earnings growth play, but I think they should give you sort of mid-single digits towards, maybe if you're lucky, edging up towards later single digits. But I think it'll do that with relative predictability. Yeah. So if you look for the year to June 22, this current year, they're on about an 11 multiple, and then the market's quite excited about the prospects next year. So I think it's a better business than the market's giving the rating on. And I think a little bit of good news will probably go quite a long way. I think this whole COVID vaccine, plant story is overshadowing.
Yeah. Okay. Gents, we have to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Carl Gevers is from Benguela Global Fund Managers. Graham Koerner is from Koerner Perspective, and we'll be back again tomorrow night. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.